trade deadline edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. We've been talking about it for what feels like an eternity now, and it has come and gone. The Ducks have made the moves. The league set a record today with 32 trades on trade deadline day. It's the highest since 2010, where there was 31. Jake, how you feeling?
Sure. No, it was an entertaining...
How you're feeling is sure?
Yeah, it was an entertaining deadline.
Sure of yourself?
I think that overall, you look at the number of trades, you look at what happened, just from a pure overall perspective with the NHL, it was an entertaining deadline. Entertaining allowed for the trade deadline shows to not have to go to absolute craziness to be able to make it through the day. I think from a Ducks perspective, I'm probably left a little bit disappointed, to be honest, and not necessarily because a big move wasn't made and the people I had hoped would be traded are still on this team. It's mainly due to the fact of it's just I'm kind of left in the same exact situation that I was in a week ago, where I don't really know the full direction of this team. It doesn't feel like there's a clear path. And so we'll get into it because I know you kind of disagree with me on the feelings of the Ducks at this deadline. So what are your thoughts overall real quick?
Well, let's just get into the trades. So the biggest one, just objectively the biggest one that had the most moving pieces in it did not happen today. It happened last Friday. Andre Kasha, we hardly knew you. Gone to the Boston Bruins in exchange for David Backes and his contract, Axel Anderson prospect, and a 2020 first round pick, the Boston Bruins pick, which figures to be a very low pick in the first round. Probably it could be the 31st pick overall. It could be the very last pick of the first round. So let's just start right there. That is the biggest trade of this deadline. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on it?
Ooh, boy, do I have a lot of thoughts on this trade. So there may be people out there that disagree with me.
It feels like
this.
An eternity ago that this trade
it
happened.
It does. You may even disagree with me on this, to be honest. But in my head, the way that I'm able to look at this trade is it's almost like two trades in one. At least that's how I view this deal, because you look at David Backes, you look at the money that was left on this deal. It was around $6 to $6.5 million. And I believe that Boston is eating a quarter of that for next year. So it comes out to around $4.5 million on the cap. But let's be real here, because I feel like I've seen a lot of people around trying to make the case that Kasha got the Ducks a first. David Backes and his horrible contract got the Ducks a first. That, or at least highly contributed to the fact that the Ducks got a first round pick out of Boston, because you look at the deal over summer where Patrick Marleau went to Carolina and that essentially got Carolina a first round pick. That kind of set the market value for eating a year of a bad contract. And David Backes is going to have to play. It's not as if they can just eat that. And David Backes, I think at this point, a lot of people believe, and I'm in that boat, where he's essentially a negative value player. And so the Ducks may be worse with him in the lineup as compared to him not being in the lineup. So having said that, that is a big reason why they get the first. And in my personal opinion, that's the main reason they get a first round pick out of this. And so when you break it down like that, essentially they got the first for David, for taking on David Backes, for taking that cap hit off of Boston's books. And then in return for Andre Kasha, which in my head is the second part of the deal, they get Axel Anderson. And let's just kind of throw it out there for how all the different prognosticators and prospect people are putting it. Everyone kind of has Axel Anderson as a bottom pairing defenseman if he makes it to the league, right? That's kind of what you're seeing also, right, Felix?
Yeah, he's a middling defense prospect. Yeah. So some people tend to be higher on him. Some people tend to be a little lower.
Mm-hmm.
The Ducks made it known that they were high on him.
Yes.
That they've had their scouts at a lot of his games. So
yeah,
clearly the Ducks fall into that camp that believes in his potential. He is a more offensively inclined defenseman, is a right shooting guy. So he is a guy who could potentially become a contributor for the Ducks. I don't think it's fair to totally write him off.
No.
But he's not... he's not a blue chip prospect. He's a middling prospect in one of the shallowest prospect pools in the league. And so it doesn't bode extremely well for his upside, but he could conceivably become an NHL player. That's not outside of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah, it's definitely not. And so,
I mean, he was a second round pick.
He was a second round pick, but like you said, per different prospect people, I think Scott Wheeler was one, had him 11th out of the Boston prospect pool, and that is one of the worst ones in the league. And so when you break it down into that, I just feel like the return is underwhelming. And I know that there's going to be the argument out there, and it's fair, and I agree with it, that Andre Kasha's market was hurt. That the market
value was that a joke about Andre Kasha's injury?
It actually wasn't meant to be, but it definitely came out that way. But the market value for Kasha was down because of his injury history. There's really no way around it. He missed half of last season. He's missed portions of this year with various injuries, and that's definitely going to hurt the value of the player. And so my main issue with it is that if that is his market value, if it indeed was. I mean, let me kind of add a little bit more, give the Ducks maybe a little bit more credit here and not break it up simply as Backes and a first and Kasha for Anderson and kind of break it into those two deals and say, well, Backes didn't get you a first necessarily, that it's all kind of this one bigger deal.
Yeah, that I think that's where you're getting it really wrong, is that I don't think that just taking on Backes gets you a first, because okay. His contract isn't really that bad. He has 1 year left at 4.5.
Well, I think that the main reason where I'm going with that
there's no term on it. It's 1 year where you have to allocate 4.5.
That was the thing with Marlowe. Marlowe was a single year.
Sure, but those are two different situations. I mean, I understand the Boston Bruins are up against the cap, but I don't know. I just don't think that taking on Backes is this huge burden for the other team. To me, the way I see it, I think that Andre Kasha alone on the market probably could get you a second. And then the Bruins probably came in and said, hey, well, if you take Backes as well, we can make that second a first. And I honestly think that that's how it shook out at the end.
Let me ask you
this. And then the Ducks probably came back and said, okay, well, if you're going to have us take that contract, then we want a prospect. And, oh, we love Axel Anderson. And then Don Sweeney probably had to put his phone on mute just to allow something to crack up for a second and then start talking again and make the deal. Yep. That's probably how it went down.
Let me ask you this. Do you think this is an all-time low point for Andre Kasha's trade value? I mean, theoretically, it could go lower.
That's the thing that clouds all of this, is that as people who watch Andre Kasha play consistently, which might not be a very large group of people, we understand that he's a very effective player and that he has some upside and he's only 24, but the way the rest of the league views him is probably not in that light. His career high in games played in a season is 66. In those 66 games, he did score 20 goals. So it's not as if, he's a guy without any potential, but he does have an injury history. He's only played in 30 games this season and he scored 11 goals in those 30 games. But at the end of the day, teams will see him as a guy who's potentially a middle six player, and if he stays healthy, could maybe become a top line guy. But at 24, he kind of is what he is at this point, and I think that severely impacted his trade value. And sorry, I meant 7 goals this season in 49 games. So
yeah,
I was looking at his previous season. But yeah, all of this to say that I just don't think his value was very high, and you could argue maybe the Ducks could have gotten a less cumbersome return by taking on the Backes contract, but I don't really see the Backes contract as that big of a burden, and they get a first out of it. So I don't know. I to me, this is the Ducks basically saying that they didn't think Andre Kasha is going to last. This is them basically saying, we don't believe in Andre Kasha moving forward.
Yeah, I would
and
agree.
So for them, and I think that for them, and I tend to agree with this, that it's not a big cost to this team.
I think my main contention with it and my big kind of issue is that as a general manager, you, especially a team in the situation the Ducks are in, because let's not try to candy coat it. The Ducks are in a rebuild right now. There's no way around it. This whole conversation last year.
But they got a first, which presumably helps the rebuild.
Yeah, but.
And a prospect.
But hear me out on this. the when you're in a rebuild, when you want to be taking some risks, you want to take a risk on a or take the riskier situation that could yield a higher upside, a higher ceiling type situation. And I think my issue with this is, while yes, Andre Kasha does have those injuries issues, yes, those are a concern. But what we have seen when he has been healthy is, and especially I think this year, you look at his shooting percentage, and I think that's a big driving force behind his goals being so low, is just unsustainably low shooting percentage.
Right.
And it's eventually going to come up. And so you're essentially trading off this guy who, yes, there is a bit more risk associated with him, for essentially Axel Anderson. And yes, there's the pick, so we'll talk about, we've talked about that, but mm-hmm. looking at the prospects simply, you're taking on a guy who Axel Anderson, at least this point, seems more like a floor type player. He's not a guy that seems like he has a very high ceiling. It seems like he has a decent floor. What I mean by that is the lowest end of his talent is pretty set. There's not this big variance. It's pretty set kind of where he probably will end up, and he won't probably be that much higher than that. And that's at least what I'm reading. Now, I could be wrong, but when you're a team in a rebuild, you want to be accepting that riskier player. And so it just feels counterintuitive doing that. Well, yes, it is good they got a first, and there is that defense in this deal. The thing that I don't love is that you sold low on a player, which should be a cardinal sin to any general manager overall, honestly, is selling low. And
right. But at the same time, if Andre Kasha was having a great season, I don't think the Ducks would be looking to move him.
And is that an issue?
Well, no, not necessarily. But if you see him as part of your next wave, one way or another, they've seen good seasons for Andre Kasha. It's not as if there's this insignificant sample.
They've had one. They've seen one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think that the issues that he has are going away. And I think that they saw that as well. We're just going to move on from that and get a first out of it.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of a tax with Backes, but I don't know. I think that with this trade, ultimately, it really just comes down to your opinion on it. I think that there's arguments to be made each way. It's not really a trade that I have a super strong opinion about either way. I think that there's definitely some fair criticisms of it, and there's also reasons to be somewhat okay with it.
Yeah.
So
I think this is a trade that you're going to need a year or two at least, because a lot of the evaluation of this trade is going to be how healthy Andre Kasha ends up being over the course of his career. If he ends up staying healthy in Boston and playing consistently, I think this deal looks a lot worse in hindsight.
Agreed. I mean, that would be catastrophic for the Ducks, because the whole reason you're trading him is because you don't think he can stay healthy. And the Ducks, by the way, don't have the best record when it comes to injuries in the last few years. Andre Kasha is not the only guy who's fallen victim to that, but clearly it seems to happen to him far more often. So we're coming up on our break here, so we can't go all the way deep dive into a trade, but let's at least get started. So the Ducks made a bunch of trades today on deadline day. Let's get into one that I think we all knew was coming. We actually definitely knew it was coming last night against Vegas, when the Ducks held out Derek Grant for precautionary reasons. Is that term new this year?
I feel like it's been used.
I think the NHL just needs to force teams to say trade deadline considerations instead of precautionary reasons. Just come on. Just put it out there. But anyway, so Derek Grant was held out of the game last night for precautionary reasons, and early this morning he was dealt to the Philadelphia Flyers, so he heads back to Pennsylvania, different team this time. The Ducks get a fourth round pick out of it, and Kyle Cricciolo, who has been an AHL player for the last couple of years and doesn't seem headed towards regular NHL duty anytime soon. So really, they got a fourth round pick for Derek Grant. What do you think of that?
I'm good with it, actually. Sorry. I mean,
It's what you do in this situation. Derek Grant is a fourth line center. That is a spot that hopefully the Ducks will have occupied by a younger player, a guy who figures to be in their next wave. He's having the best season of his career. The Ducks sold high on Derek Grant. They properly managed his situation.
Yeah. Trading Derek Grant for a fourth round pick is an absolute win for this Ducks team moving forward.
It's essentially a free fourth round.
Yeah, because, I mean, for anyone out there that might be a little bit bummed out by this because of how good Derek Grant had been for the Ducks this year, and we've gone into depth or gone in depth on that a bunch about how he probably actually isn't as good as everyone's kind of thinking he is, but he had the counting stats, and that's a big thing. And being able to get a fourth round pick out of a guy like that, that is essentially a fourth line center, is a big deal. And one that they signed over summer, they got for nothing. That is exactly what you should be doing. Exploiting the market, exploiting what is there and what people are willing to pay. And so this is probably one of my favorite moves of the day from Bob Murray on the
whole.
Just
a pure asset management perspective. This kind of cracks me up because for all the people throughout the whole year who thought, oh, Derek Grant is becoming this go-to defensive center and look how much the Ducks value him. I think for the Ducks to flip him for a fourth rounder, doesn't that kind of tell you a little bit of how they felt about the player? Well, maybe they still like him. Maybe they'll still try to re-sign him this summer.
I think it might just show... I think one of the interesting things is that it just shows what his value is around the league. If he truly was this great shutdown center,
exactly,
he would be worth more than a fourth. So
exactly.
It kind of reveals what he actually is, which is a guy on a bender, on a scoring bender. But
On a bender, yes.
But getting a fourth for that's important. And I mean, this essentially gets back the Ducks' fourth that they trade, or a fourth round pick to the Ducks that they traded for Nicolas Deloria.
That's the criticism of the fourth. Is that they're just back to square one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, we're hitting our first break here, so let's just jump right into it. And don't you worry, folks. We have plenty more trades to talk about. So we'll be right back. Okay, back from our first break. So, as we were just discussing, Derek Grant for a fourth. It's a quiet home run. It's a quiet home run. It's a batting practice home run. Nobody really cares that much, but it's still significant. They still add another draft pick, and that's what they need right now. They need a ton of draft picks. So let's continue on. A pair of trades that I find fascinating, because when you think about how the Ducks would have approached this deadline, and that's the difficult thing when evaluating how the Ducks handled this deadline, is you have to keep in consideration how you think they should approach it while also being able to evaluate what happened on its own in a vacuum. And so on one hand, you would think, okay, the Ducks are in a situation where they can sell off pieces and go and obtain some draft picks, some future assets. And that's not really what they did at all. Outside of the Andre Kasha deal and the Derek Grant deal, there weren't really any clean transactions like that. And let's start with this one, which I did not see coming. I mean, we kind of knew maybe one day Nick Ritchie wouldn't be with the Ducks, but I didn't think it would happen this fast. They traded him to the Boston Bruins. So both Ritchie and Kasha, who, by the way, we're pretty good on the line together for a couple years there. Both now in Boston. Danton Heinen in return. The Ducks obtain Heinen, who is only 24 as well, so he's right around that age. He does have a pretty good rookie season under his belt. So as a rookie at 22, he scored 16 goals and put up 47 points. So the Ducks essentially there, and this is just my own opinion, they traded styles. Nick Ritchie is a guy who we've talked a lot about as a good possession driving forward, who gets to the net, who generates a lot of shots from, you know, the middle of the ice, but not necessarily, actually not at all, a skilled player. Whereas Heinen isn't quite as solid two-way along the boards, that kind of player, but he's more of a guy who goes east-west, more of a playmaker, more of a passer, more of a guy who has, to me, at least some offensive upside. So the Ducks essentially swap styles there. What did you think of that?
Ooh. So I think this is my view on a lot of these trades from this deadline. I think if you isolate each trade on its own, the only one that I really kind of... Yeah, there's probably two I really dislike on the whole. I don't love the Kasha move, as we've gone into, but I think even with all of them, you can make the justification in a vacuum that they make sense, that the value is there in terms of the market rate for each player. And I think you can make that justification here that Nick Ritchie is cheaper than Danton Heinen. Danton Heinen may have a bit of a higher profile than Nick
Ritchie. He makes 2.8
yeah.
right now.
So I think when you just throw in the contract, I think that makes it about the same. The thing that is slightly frustrating here, I guess, maybe from my perspective, is that we've kind of been sitting here talking about why Nick Ritchie has been good, what he's been doing well, all this stuff for driving play, and all these things are really helpful, and it really felt like he was finally hitting his stride. And I mean, even last night, he had a four-point game, two goals, two assists. It felt like him, Terry, and Henrique were gelling a bit there. And yes, there are the penalty issues, no doubt.
This is worth mentioning. I just love this stat. So Heinen's career high in penalty minutes in a season is 16. And Nick Ritchie's career low is 86.
Yeah. So quick, I now have up on the screen, Charting Hockey, Sean Tierney did some really good work today, just putting out some really succinct charts, just kind of having data from different websites. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Felix, but I believe that the Y value in each of these is...
I don't have access to the chart right now.
All so. Good. It's just...
I'm like the other listeners who are wondering what's going on.
Exactly. So if you want to see the charts, go to Charting Hockey's Twitter account, and he tweeted out all these, and I believe it's the percentile that they're in. So Nick Ritchie and on-ice percentages, individual rates, a lot of things he's very good. In terms of war, his biggest efficiency is in the defensive zone and penalties. Penalties drawn, penalties taken. He's not great in terms of transitions, which is tracking data per Corey Schneider. His carry-in and exit rank aren't great, but offensive average is pretty good. Whereas if I transition now over to Danton Heinen, you'll see Danton Heinen's on-ice individual rates aren't as great. His offensive war is not as great as Nick Ritchie, but he's much better on the defense and on the power play. And the biggest difference is penalties taken, which you just talked about, and his carry-in rate. So
he also draws more penalties.
Yeah, but so his biggest thing, though, is that he provides a bit of a different player than Nick Ritchie
exactly.
does. He provides a transition-type player, which you can see by the fact that his carry-in rate is going to be better. He's going to be a bit more solid in his own zone. After kind of doing a bit of research, looking into a couple different things, it almost seems like Danton Heinen is your a prototypical kind of bottom six type forward. At least that's what I've seen from some people out there, that's essentially what he's going to become of a cup contending type team.
What's interesting is that, so The Point Hockey tweeted out some stats. So Heinen ranks seventh in the NHL in rush pass completions.
So oh, yeah, I saw that. That
clearly, he's a guy who gets out on the rush quite a bit to get to that, and that's per 20 minutes. So he averages one rush pass completion per 20 minutes. And in terms of slot pass completions, he ranks 99th, and this is all per 20 minutes, whereas Ritchie ranks 35th in inner slot shots per 20 and 67th in deflections. So you can pretty much see it all right there. They're just different players.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're of the mind that the Ducks should be becoming more of a rush-type team, well, then there you have it. Does that necessarily mean they're going to be a better team? Who knows? But clearly there's a philosophical shift there, because we've seen the Ducks so often in the past be this kind of down-low team, cycle team, bruising team, and clearly this is a total shift away from that.
Let me ask you this, though, real quick. Sorry, this is just popping into my head. As you bring up the fact that they want to transition, they just traded away probably one of their better players, not in Nick Ritchie, but a couple days earlier, in trading away Andre Kasha, one of their better transition players.
But there's different considerations.
Agreed,
there, though.
Agreed.
And also, Andre Kasha clearly had more value than Nick Ritchie.
Fair. But yeah. it's
a little different. But yeah, I understand your point.
And my point there, though, is that when you look at, and we'll get into this more when we kind of finish wrapping up going through all of the deals, but there's no clear picture, I think, when all these are done, because you have some guys move because they want to make the team faster, yet they've also moved some of their quicker guys in that same process. So it doesn't feel like there's a complete clear picture. And that's kind of my issue with this trade, is it just kind of feels like a lateral move. It almost feels like, I mean, I think we used this term last year with the Shore for Cogliano deal, that it was shuffling deck chairs. It was making a trade to make a trade. And while, yes, maybe this may work out better for the Ducks in the long run, having a guy like a Danton Heinen, it feels like a lateral move.
It is lateral. It's completely lateral. The guys are the same age. The money's pretty similar. They're just different players. Clearly, I mean, Nick Ritchie on the Boston Bruins. Talk about a match made in heaven.
Are they going to put those two on a line together, by the way?
I really hope so. Because in the playoffs, that's going to be a great line. Nick Ritchie is a guy who can be really good for the Bruins in the playoffs. So you talked about Devin Shore, though. Let's get into him. He was also traded today in exchange for Sonny Milano, a player I never thought the Ducks would ever trade for, because you talk about a guy who doesn't really go with the Ducks that we've seen in the past. Sonny Milano is a skill player. That's what he's been known for. You know, he's not a guy who necessarily is known for his two-way game. What I found interesting, though, in doing a little bit of research, is that all of his on-ice metrics are really good. That, you know, there's always been this knock on him that, oh, well, he's this skill player, but he's got some good on-ice rates with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's been positive in terms of expected goals, shot attempts at different points in his career. So it's kind of the same thing. Devin Shore can never really find a spot in Anaheim's lineup this season. Really, ever since being traded for Andrew Cogliano, the Ducks have never really seemed to know what to do with him. Dallas Eakins would use him in the top six. Then he'd use him on the fourth line. He just never seemed like a guy who really made a lot of sense for this team. Whereas Sonny Milano gives you another guy, kind of like Heinen, who just has a skill upside, who plays a different style of game, and who could conceivably make this team more potent offensively.
Yeah, he definitely can. I think this is the biggest win of the deadline for the Ducks. I think that Devin Shore is a guy that just clearly didn't fit. He didn't mesh with the Duck style. Dallas Eakins didn't like him, and they got back Sonny Milano. And for those of you watching the live stream or the YouTube video, I just had up on the screen a highlight from Milano that Allison Lucan had tweeted out earlier today, and it was a between the legs goal on a breakaway by him.
He's got some skill.
He's got a lot of skill, and so if you're looking for a creative type player, that's exactly what they brought in. And like you said, his on-ice metrics are pretty solid. The main issue with him, and we'll get into this with another player coming up, is that he has this reputation around him of not exactly being the best in his own zone. And
but that doesn't seem true based on the stats.
Another player that we've seen. Yes, exactly my point, is that they get this reputation. I mean, what was it? John Tortorella just wouldn't play him because of it. And I think that he's, scratched him a couple games because of that type of situation. And it's just, I'm very curious to see how it plays out, because Sonny Milano seems very similar to Daniel Sprong. Very, very similar in a lot of different ways. And as we'll get into, the Ducks ended up moving on from Daniel Sprong. So I'm excited about this trade. I think Sonny Milano could potentially bring a lot to the Ducks that is needed. My one concern is, and this is a difference between him and Sprong, is he doesn't shoot the puck a lot.
No, more of a playmaker type, I believe.
Yeah, and so I'm very curious to see where he slots in. It seems like he's reporting to Anaheim. How old is he, by the way? What is he, 24, I believe?
He's 23.
He's 20.
He's going to be 24 in a couple months, but yeah, okay. he's 23. And I mean, not that this is necessarily the thing you want to hear if you're a Ducks fan, but last season in the AHL, he had 24 points in 27 games there. So he's a good player. It remains to be seen if he can stick in the NHL, but clearly the Ducks, this doesn't necessarily mean it's going to stay true, but clearly they believe in him for now and they want to see what he can bring. And if nothing else, at least with Sonny Milano, and I think you kind of touched on this, you have the potential for something. Whereas with Devin Shore, it's pretty obvious that he kind of is what he's going to be.
Yeah.
And what he is and what he's going to be is not that exciting, which is fine. There's a role for those kind of guys, But with Sonny Milano, the Sonny Milanos of the world, the Danton Heinens of the world, I think these are the kind of players the Ducks need more of. Just bites at the apple, guys who could potentially become better offensive players to make this team more potent offensively. Richie is maybe a tough price to pay for that, but I just in terms of these two moves, I am a fan of them because I think they're shifting towards a better,
well,
or at least just a more potent profile type for it, a player.
This Milano type trade, at least this at least builds to the future.
It has upside, yeah.
And exactly. I mean, think
Heinen is 24 and Milano's 23, so it's not like they're getting prospects, but they are getting guys who couldn't fit on another team, but those teams were pretty good.
Well,
so maybe that means they could thrive in actual roles.
And I think if anyone out there is wondering why I'm good with this deal and I'm not as happy with the...
Well, low cost.
Exactly. You're giving up Devin Shore, who, I mean, how many games has he played this season for the Ducks? 20? So that's just off the top of my head taking a guess there.
A not significant amount.
No. And so they got a player with high upside for someone that just simply wasn't playing for the Ducks, wasn't going to play. And here's the other thing. When he did play, he wasn't making an impact. So it's not as if this situation where...
So Andrew Cogliano for Sonny Milano?
I think that actually when you put it in that context, because...
Two Italian last names?
Yeah. When I first saw that Devin Shore was getting traded, I was just like, oh no. Now we're going to see the Andrew Cogliano trade kind of
be wrapped up
and the value like would have been awful. But this is actually one where I think Bob Murray did well. And I think that he did well. And I think even if you were to swap Andrew Cogliano in that trade as compared to Devin Shore, I think that's still a good trade. It's a bit of a reclamation project.
Yeah. But I can appreciate that the Ducks are trying on these types of players. Because they do seem like the kind of team that maybe wouldn't be so welcoming to a player like Milano, who I don't even think was in the same category as Sprong in terms of reclamation projects, but just a guy who clearly there's some work to be done there. We'll see. I'm curious to just see what he looks like for the Ducks.
Yeah, and he's definitely a move for the Ducks. I believe John Broadbent in our Twitch chat right now, who is the goals writer for Anaheim Calling, mentioned that he's not waiver exempt. So this is not a move for the goals. He's not gonna play in the goals playoff. He is coming in for the Ducks.
Yeah, and good. That's what they should be trying to do. Get NHL players.
Like, yep.
The Ducks definitely made some AHL moves today, but that's not where the priority should be right now. Okay, let's talk about what could easily be characterized as an AHL move before we jump into our second break. The Daniel Sprong experiment in Anaheim is over. He is off to the Washington Capitals in exchange for defenseman Christian Juice. Two guys who can't seem to really stick in, you know, for their respective teams. Juice has played 42 games in the AHL this season. Has 32 points in the AHL. So nothing to sneeze at there, but has only played two games for the Caps. At one point, it did seem like he was going to be a part of the Caps' future, but as that team got deeper, as they introduced more veterans into their lineup, it seemed like he just became a guy who was on the outside looking in. So what was your reaction to this trade?
My reaction to the Sprong trade is essentially a little bit of disappointment. He's a guy that...
Asset management disappointment? Because if they intended on trading him, why didn't they just play him in the NHL for the last month?
Yeah, and I think it's also this is one where you look at the trade tree and just kind of...
Marcus Pettersson for Christian Juice?
Yeah, which is a clear downgrade. So Christian Juice is a 25-year-old AHL defenseman. That's essentially what he's been this entire season. Now, granted, Washington is...
I think he has upside, though. And I think...
He does.
If nothing else, Christian Juice does provide them at least some more depth on the blue line that they don't really have right now. Or at least that they didn't have before. So, I mean, I just think this goes to show how little value Daniel Sprong actually had.
Yeah. No, and I agree with that. I think that... And this is kind of what I...
So that should be the criticism of this, is that they sold Daniel Sprong. If you talk about selling low, this is selling low.
Yeah, agreed with that. And I think that this is kind of what I said. If you isolate every single one of these trades, You can understand the value. You can understand why it's good. And you can basically understand each trade separately. But when you look at the overall pictures, when it starts to get muddy, which when it starts to kind of become an iffy type deal, and that's where I'm looking at this one, to be honest, is that when you add in that fact of Pettersson, when you add in the fact that Juice wasn't fully able to crack into the Capitals lineup, and granted, it's a good Capitals lineup over there. So we'll see. He's 25, under contract, I believe, for next year in addition to this, but I'll double check on that one right now. And hopefully, well, actually not hopefully, he is actually going to report right to the Ducks. He's a player that they're hoping will come into the lineup and instantly make an impact on the power play.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah.
So let's go into our second break here, and we'll be right back to finish off the rest of our breakdown here. Okay, so we are back from our second and final break. So which trade did we leave on? I'm getting them jumbled up here.
Yeah, we left off on Sprong.
Okay.
What are your overall thoughts on that deal?
I don't have a whole lot to say. I think Daniel Sprong was just an outsider from the beginning almost with the Ducks. I really don't totally understand where it went wrong, though, because it seemed like last year they at least gave him a chance, and he put up 14 goals. It's not as if he was just this total waste of a roster spot, and this year didn't make the team out of camp, and that seemed to seal his fate. I think Dallas Eakins just didn't like his game, and they moved him for what can best be described as a depth defenseman. It's just kind of a boring end to this whole saga, but you knew it was going to happen. Hopefully for Sprong, he can find his footing in Washington and potentially make an impact for the Capitals. That would be pretty neat. After that, I mean, there's a pretty steep drop-off in how interesting these trades become. But let's talk about Corbinian Holzer. It's over. The Holzer experiment. Are you sad to see it finally end?
Is sad the right word? it's whatever.
Well, they got a sixth-round pick in 2022.
Yeah.
And Matt Irwin.
So,
man, what happened to Matt Irwin? Because a couple of years ago, Matt Irwin was supposedly decent, and now he's getting traded for Corbinian Holzer.
That can't be good. As Olaf his Berserker says, a wild Holzer has disappeared.
Yeah, it's the end of the bit, sadly.
It is. Multiple bits have ended. Nick Ritchie is all right.
Nick Ritchie's good. Yeah. It elevated.
My beaten by Dre. Rest in peace. I'll miss that bit.
Man, the Ducks just knew about our bits. They may watch to annihilate them.
Do they watch the show? Who in the Ducks front office watches the show?
Maybe they just want to ruin our fun. They have someone who's just keeping us in their crosshairs. No, but seriously, I mean, getting a pick for Holzer seems good, even if it's a pretty distant pick that's probably not gonna amount to an NHL player. That's something, I guess, and Matt Irwin is going to be another depth defenseman, another left shooting defenseman.
Yeah.
So nothing trade.
Can we talk about that for a quick second?
Well, hold on. Let's just round out the trades, because we actually have another defenseman to talk about. So
fair.
The Ducks got Joel Pearson from the Edmonton Oilers in exchange for Angus Redmond and a conditional seventh round pick in 2022. So. Just wheeling and dealing there.
And the condition on that pick, just so everyone knows, that basically if the pick, if Pearson plays in 25 NHL games next season, then the Ducks have to give Edmonton the pick. If he does not play in 25 games, then it is just Redmond for Pearson.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe Pearson could one day become an NHL defenseman. He does have some upside, supposedly, but yeah, seems pretty much like an AHL move to me. He's 25. This season is his first season in North America. He has 16 points in 27 games for Bakersfield, and he is a right shot, so there you go.
He's played
13 games for the Oilers, and he is a Swedish defenseman, so the Ducks filling back up their quota by going out and getting Persson. And let's see here. Juice is not Swedish, but they got Anderson.
No, I think Juice is Swedish.
Is he really?
Well, I'm pretty positive that Juice is Swedish. Yeah, he's Swedish.
Yeah, so boom, there you go. That's a very important stat that the Ducks have to keep up.
Yeah.
So three Swedish defensemen brought in. But yeah, so it's pretty much the last trade that we have to talk about. Well, actually, yeah, that is all of them. Zooming out now, this is just like a pile of moves, and I'm still not totally sure what to make of them. But I think it's the Ducks essentially not going all the way, not totally leaning into, hey, we messed up and we need to move on. It's like a half-footed approach to that. And you heard that in Bob Murray's comments today, where he essentially was asked, well, not directly, but were some of the bigger pieces ever in play? So like a Manson or a Henrique maybe, or who knows? And he kind of dodged that question, but he did add that we better not be in this position next year. And to me, before Jake just goes absolutely bonkers, that kind of makes sense, because if you look at this trade deadline for the Ducks, they didn't necessarily have to go fire sale this year. They didn't have to do that because their bigger pieces that they can move out, there's still nothing that says you have to move them this season. Now, their value is obviously higher now because there's more term, but Josh Manson will still have two more years left on his contract. Adam Henrique may actually be easier to move as time goes on. Silverberg, if they ever move him, would be easier to move on from. Same thing with potentially Rickard Rakell. He talked about being disappointed in the leadership of the 25 to 29, 30 year olds, which is very specific and targets a very clear group of players. So to me, this is the Ducks not going all the way in yet on this quote unquote reset, but it's clearly a step towards that. It's a step. It's a halfway admission of, hey, the way that we're playing, the kind of roster we have right now, isn't working. And I do think that that is healthy. They just didn't lean all the way into it. Let's see what also happens in the off season.
Is the floor mine?
Yeah, get into it. Get into the rant.
Oh, this has been stewing all day. No, obviously, we need to wait till the deadline or the draft to really see what happens. But I think my biggest point of frustration is we said that same thing last year and we've said that same thing the year before.
Yeah. But I don't think those are comparable though, last year the Ducks did have the argument of, hey, this was an injury riddled year. Potentially next year you run it back and this team could compete. It wasn't yet time to blow it up.
Look at the defense though. And that was, you and I even talked about this last year at the deadline when, once they traded Montour, there was something missing, and it was odd, and they didn't address it.
But we talked about how as long as Manson Lindholm are there, Fowler and Gouley seem to mesh, and the forwards being healthy. Anyway, all this to say, there was still an idea that this team could compete.
Sure.
And that's why they didn't do anything.
They obviously thought that they needed someone for that other side. They tried to get Justin Falk. They tried to get Kevin Shattenkirk. Exactly.
The Ducks wanted to make the playoffs this year. This was not supposed to be.
But
the season they're having right now is not intentional.
What did they end up doing at the draft, though? They didn't do anything. And so that's kind of my point is, yes, I agree. We need to wait till the draft.
They weren't. But the thing is, you're talking about a reality that was never going to be there. They were never going to do that.
But
Manson, Henrique, none of those guys were getting moved last trade.
No. So this was not necessarily me saying that they needed to get moved last summer. My point is that every single year we've kind of said, let's wait for the draft.
And sure,
when something doesn't happen necessarily at the deadline, and that doesn't necessarily fall into place.
But I do think this year it is a bit more valid, because I do think that moving some of those guys, it's just not as commonplace at the trade deadline.
Well,
some of the guys that got traded today didn't necessarily, no one really had a lot of term that was moved around. And so,
how much Trocheck had some term?
He had 2 years.
Yeah. But
I don't think Florida is a good barometer for trading.
Fair.
Anymore.
But regardless, but
they traded Trocheck for a bag of magic beans.
We did see that guys were willing to overpay, and there were guys that, not necessarily today, But there were guys that were moved with some term. You look at Jason Zucker. There was
different
another one.
Situation.
But still, that's a guy with term that was moved. Every situation is different. There's everything. You can go with that with everything. But there is a guy that with term that was moved. But regardless, that stuff can wait till the offseason. But here's my biggest frustration with this deadline as a whole and everything is that this was a seller's market. This was without a doubt a seller's market. You look at the prices that were paid in the past week to week and a half, and they were absolutely insane with what teams were playing. And the Ducks end up coming out of it with one more first round pick, a fourth round pick to basically take the place of a fourth round pick that they traded for Nicola Deloria.
And see, that to me is the criticism of this deadline is that the Ducks didn't really do anything to stockpile picks. They didn't really do anything to increase their future prospects. They kind of did. They did get a first. They did obtain some prospects. They did shuffle the deck chairs around. But I agree with you that there is no clear cut.
Well, and
there is no clear cut accumulation of future assets.
And the other thing is that they got that first and the fourth. Outside of that, it was a lot of lateral moves. It was a lot of moves that really, and this is kind of where I look at this, is that these are moves that are made on the margins. These are moves that if you're a contending team, if you're a team trying to get better right now, you're making a change in a player for stylistic concerns. And you make those changes on the margins because in the playoffs, in a playoff race, those different plays on the margin and those different things on the margin can make a difference. And the issue is, if you want to move Nick Ritchie, fine. Try to get back something that's going to help you further in the future.
Here's what's insane to me is that Michael Delzato is still a Duck.
Yeah.
There may not
have been any value.
Well, that's because they probably waited too
long. They
didn't
play him. Well, they also didn't play him a whole lot this year.
He played
somewhat.
I think that was also the challenge for this team is that they didn't have any clear-cut guys to just flip for picks, right? It wasn't a guy with 1 year, maybe 2 years. A lot of the guys that they could have done that with were much bigger pieces, much more difficult assets to move on from.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's why they were kind of in a corner because they didn't really have any of those guys. The one guy that they, the few guys that they did have, so Derek Grant, they did flip him, and Michael Delzato, I guess a deal just didn't materialize. So that is a criticism, but also when you look at this roster, there wasn't necessarily a path towards that.
Well, let me ask you this question. Are the Ducks better today?
Yeah, I think so.
You think they're better right now than they were a week ago?
Yeah, actually, yes, because they got the additional first. I think that the guys that they flipped Shore and Ritchie for do make them better.
Sorry, let me rephrase that. Do you think the Ducks are significantly better for the now, one, and two, for the future? Do you think of right now?
They're definitely better for the future. And right now, it's probably a wash.
So I think for the future, yes, it's not significantly so, but yes, they are. And then, yeah, I think the now, because that's the thing is when you look at this, when you're looking at deadlines, you either need to make the team better right now, which is what you want if you're a contending team. You want to be better right now than you were yesterday, or you need to be better 3-4 years down the line. And that's my issue is that the deals that were good are the ones that the Milano for sure, the getting the first for Kasha. I have my quibbles obviously with that, but they did get a first and that's helpful. The other stuff really kind of doesn't do a whole lot to move the needle. And that's kind of my issue, but I want to get into these quotes though, because these are interesting to say the least to me. So I'm just going to read them out real quick. There are three different ones that I think are of note when Bob Murray is talking about Nick Ritchie. With talking about that some players at different times need a change of scenery, we felt at this time that Nick should get a change of scenery. I don't know. Do you agree with that necessarily? Or does that feel like lip service?
Well,
because he's a player, we've talked about it a bunch on the show that he...
Well, change of scenery is very coded. That could mean just about anything.
True.
So, was there something off the ice?
That's a good point.
Tension in the locker room?
Fair.
It's just this appeal to the unknown almost. No, to me, again, that trade just seems like they don't want that kind of player. It's not that they don't want that kind of player in their lineup. It's just that they want more guys like a Heinen, like a Milano, just more skill-oriented players who can also obviously bring a two-way element.
Yeah. And all right, let's get into this quote, because I think this is one where if we take it at face value, which
don't do that.
You shouldn't necessarily take everything said by a general manager at face value.
You got to get your Rosetta Stone out for these.
But I think this is an interesting one. When Bob Murray was asked if he was pleased with the progression of younger players, he said, "I've seen some signs of improvement in them to all different degrees. Some of them have been more consistent in what we're seeing. They're all coming along. We've got to figure out what we're going to do moving forward with them. What's best for each and every one of them moving forward. With the young guys, I'm not disappointed in anything there. My biggest concern has been with the leadership around them. We've had some of our guys, as I've said a few times, that are 24, 29, 30 years old. Their inconsistencies have been concerning to me. I've said that before, too. If they don't get back to where they should be, some of these guys, then it's a much bigger problem than we think."
Well, that's the thing. And to me, that hits the nail right on the head. Well, I think he's correct in his assessment of the youngsters, right? It hasn't kind of all been super clear, but there is progress, right? I think that was a pretty agreeable statement. But with the veteran guys, I mean, the leadership thing, I think maybe if he's referring to their on-ice play, there are some guys within that group who maybe haven't been quite as effective this season.
I think there's two that maybe point to.
Well, Manson is definitely one.
I think Lindholm's had some rough spots throughout the year. But that's
Manson and Lindholm you could make the case for.
I think those are the only two, because you look at Henrique, Raquel, Silverberg, Fowler. They're all on pace for about 50-plus points.
Yeah, although I think Raquel could be in that group.
But I see, that's where I agree that I think that he could be in that group, but I think that that's incorrect.
He has 13 goals in 56 games. I think that that's what they're looking at. Here's the thing. If the Ducks have another rough season next year, David Backes is going to be on this team. So yeah. I just think that if they have another rough season, to me, this is almost in a way what you would want, Jake, is that they're probably going to struggle again. And what we know about Bob Murray is that once you start getting called out, someone is going to go. It happened to Corey Perry.
So here's where I wanted to go with this, is that for the Ducks this year, what's been the biggest roadblock between them and having success? I don't think it's Adam Henrique. I don't think it's Ricard Raquel. I don't think it's Jakob Silverberg. And I don't think it's Cam Fowler. I think the biggest issue is that the Ducks, and we're just as guilty of this as they were, but granted, we aren't the general managers of this team. I think that they bought into the potential success of the kids too much, and they have not scored at a rate that that would have been necessary for this team to be successful. Sam Steele has 20 points so far this year. Troy Terry has 15 points. So while, yes, they have shown signs of improvement, and I'm, as everyone knows, the biggest Troy Terry fan there probably is, but I think if you're trying to look for a reason why this team isn't successful, it's due to the fact that the kids haven't been producing at the rate that they probably should be when they're in the situations that they're in. And you look at Ricard Raquel. Unless maybe there's unrealistic expectations for Adam Henrique, Ricard Raquel, and Jakob Silverberg, because I think if those guys hit 50 points, that's a successful season. I think that that's a completely successful season. Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of different things. It's not just the kids being good. I think that they put a lot of stock into that. Yeah. But the thing you can point to that management got wrong or mishandled is that the blue line is terrible.
Fair.
You know, they needed to trade for Eric Gudbranson just to make it halfway respectable. They leaned way too much on Lindholm and Manson. And once those guys start declining, which, guess what? They're entering that phase of their careers now where, I mean, everyone wants to talk about Hampus Lindholm as this foundational piece. I still think he's probably a part of the next wave, but he is 26. You're looking at these guys who have logged a ton of miles in the last few years. After that, you have Cam Fowler, who's also logged a ton of miles. And then after that, there's just this huge, huge gap in talent. Jacob Larson, who's proving to barely be an NHLer. Corbin Holzer, who Dallas Aikens love, finally gone. Michael Delzato, just a bit player throughout his career. Brendan Gulley, who's fallen flat on his face at times. So there was just no defensive depth. And that really hurts when you're a team that's trying to find its bearings and implement a new system. You need some consistency on the back end. And they just didn't have that. And that is an area where you can criticize management for sure. There should have been a better insurance policy than Michael Delzato.
Yeah.
With all due respect.
Yeah.
The Stanley Cup champion, Michael Delzato.
So I think overall, I'm just confused at the shots at the 26 to 30 year olds, because I think the only two that you could maybe look at are Manson and Lindholm. And then having said that, I feel like the final quote when he had mentioned about not wanting to move a core piece, we've talked about it at length here as to why. I mean, you were the first one to really even say they should move Josh Manson, and the benefits to doing it and the pros to doing it. I feel like this just kind of lacks that foresight. The fact that not understanding that, yes, those guys may be the core players right now, but during your contending window, they may not be the core players. They may be veterans.
That's the thing. This entire approach so far, what we know about Bob Murray is that he is totally unwilling to rush into anything. He will take as much time as he can possibly have to make a decision. And that's how he's approaching this rebuild. He does not want to New York Rangers this thing and just draw a line in the sand and say, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to tell our fans and we're going to go all in on a rebuild. He is letting this be a slow drip. He wants to see if there is even a possibility that this team can turn it around. And he's going to wait until the last possible moment to do that. And the argument you can make is that time is not going to come, that these guys are not going to get better, talking about the core pieces. And at a certain point, the disconnect in the timelines between the core pieces and the youngsters, it's just too wide of a gap. And at a certain point, he will have to pay for that on the back end. Because I don't see a scenario where those two bridges are going to be gapped. Now, that being said, of course, we can look at it that way. But on the flip side of it, the optimistic view that you have to consider is that Ryan Getzlaf is going to expire after next season. Going into next year, Josh Manson will have 1 year left on his deal after that, as will Hampus Lindholm. And then from there, Rickard Rakell is going to come up. Really, the only long-term commitments that the Ducks are going to have moving forward is going to be Henrik, Silverberg, and Fowler, and John Gibson. So really, even though the Ducks are kind of slow rolling this, I still don't think that they're just totally mishandling it. I think that they're taking it really slowly, which in today's age is not going to be popular, but I don't necessarily think that they're blowing this. I do think that Josh Manson was the piece to move and they didn't do it. Now that may still happen, but there's still reason to look at this and think, hey, they're going to come out of it a better team.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think my concern with it is that the longer you wait, you're delaying the inevitable. And exactly. I think the other issue with it is that, let's say things do come together in the short term. Where does that leave the Ducks? Are they going to actually be contending for a cup? Are they set up for that? I think I saw someone tweet this out. I can't really remember. But it almost feels like, especially when you compare it to what the Kings did, because the Kings, I think, made a lot of really smart moves moving off guys that are 28, 29, 30.
The Kings made the conscious decision that they were just going to move on. Now, the Kings also had a better setup where they had a lot of obvious moves to make.
True. That is very true.
Organizationally, it's easier to justify that.
It may have been CJ that said this even, actually. But the Kings are set up to go and win a cup. The Ducks are trying to set up just playoffs. Just making the playoffs on a consistent basis and not necessarily setting up a team to win a cup. And I think that is fair, because you're not getting a bunch of assets to kind of maximize a specific contending window. You're getting assets of various different ages to have a different age set up on a team.
The thing is that the Kings are doing everything that they can. They're being proactive about it. They're doing everything that they can to make that reality happen.
Yes.
As we know, it still doesn't mean it's going to happen.
True.
But as an organization, you kind of owe it to yourself to be proactive, because ultimately, what else are you here for?
And it
the Ducks could continue on this kind of threading the needle path and maybe still come out of it just fine and be just as
that's true.
Competent. I mean, they have Trevor Zegras. They have that blue chip prospect. They're probably going to get another one this summer, and they have their first rounders. They have their second rounders. So, and they could reach a point potentially by the time Bob Murray's out of the picture where they do go full fire sale mode. So the thing you could argue is that they're just waiting too long.
Well, before and we jump,
they just need to admit it.
Before we jump into questions, I think a good way of kind of putting what you're saying, and let me know if you disagree with this, it almost feels like in a way the Ducks are being reactive as compared to being proactive.
Well, the thing is, they're just letting the results trickle in, and yeah, exactly, basing some of their decisions off of that. Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's as much of a clear-cut direction, except that let's just take our time. The direction seems to be let's inch our way towards the rebuild as opposed to just full-on.
Honestly, that's kind of one of my biggest complaints with Bob Murray on the whole is that, and now he doesn't owe anything to any fans to tell them their plan, but it is a great PR move to and allows the fans to be a part of the team when you have something like the Rangers document, where at least
I do think in today's age where fans are just so much more involved and so much more exposed to the team, it is important. It is more important nowadays than it was maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah. And so I think that's a frustration is no one actually knows where the heck this team is going and what's the long-term vision, what's the long-term plan. And I think that that's an important thing that hopefully Bob Murray can eventually address. I'm not holding my breath that he's actually going to do that and let the fans in on that, but at least having some insight to allow it, especially when you're in a period like this, you're missing the playoffs for the second straight season, you're going to have a lottery pick again, to at least allow the fans to understand, all right, I'm putting my hard-earned money into this team. I'm putting my hard-earned money to go see this team, to buy a jersey, to get a sweater. I should at least be able to know where this team is going, to know if I should keep doing that outside of just wanting to be a fan of this team, to know that they're going in the direction that I agree with.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So kind of bring it back to the roster and so on and so forth. In a couple of years' time, the Ducks are going to have some bills that are going to come due. Isaac Lindstrom, Max Comtois, Josh Mahura, Sam Steele, and Max Jones are all RFAs the same summer, as well as Danton Heinen, by the way. And Troy Terry and Sonny Milano are RFAs this upcoming summer. So those bills are going to come due. Now, you could argue maybe those guys aren't going to get that significant of raises, but one of them probably is, maybe even two to three of them.
Yeah.
And at that point, going into those years, you're going to have Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson occupying cap space. You're going to have Rickard Rakell also on the last year of his deal. To me, if I were to try to guess when any of these guys get moved, it might be in that final year of their contracts, just before the final year of their contracts. Because the Ducks may want to make room. One of them. I'm not saying all of them.
Is that a bad thing, though? To not maximize well, you know, the value?
You're not. No, I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I'm just saying I think will happen.
Fair.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, I mean, is that the way to go? Probably not.
Yeah. And I mean, Fire Carlisle in our Twitch chat even said which would be selling them at their lowest value. So yeah.
Love it.
All right. Kim Pafu said, question. Well, actually, he said more of a theory. If you guys could maybe just mention it and maybe elaborate on it. So do you think that Bob Murray is working this retool around the hopes that Zegras is going to hit the ground running? So he's trying to trade for 22 to 24 year olds, quick and skilled forwards rather than for picks and getting a few rather than trading for picks that will become 17 and 19 year olds that won't be ready until Zegras is 23 ish. I actually just thought about this now, and it makes sense to me because if they're trying to be competitive again sooner rather than later, it may be a gamble, but he's still getting a few picks just in case.
Yeah, I don't know. That's I would have to spend some time thinking about that. It's hard for me to just totally take that in on the show here.
I kind of get what he's throwing out there with the fact that Zegras should
wants
be ready.
Guys who, he wants guys who are going to be kind of in their mid-prime longer.
When Zegras is breaking into the league.
Not just Zegras, but also when these younger guys hit their actual primes.
I think what he's getting at is the fact that the Ducks just traded for a lot of
I don't think that they're making their moves in function of
Trevor Zegras,
yeah.
No.
I'm going to go with a no on that.
I think that my retort to that is you should be waiting, trying to get the 17 to 19 year old whose peak is going to align with Zegras' peak, because By the time that Zegras is in his actual prime, those guys will be exiting their prime. So yeah. That's when I talk about contending windows. You want to get guys whose ages will align. And so you could say that Max Jones and Max Comtois, they're only a couple years older than Trevor Zegras. So they're contending, their prime window should align somewhat. They're only a couple years older. Danton Heinen is 5-6 years older. So that's not going to align as well. So I get what you're throwing out there, Tony, but I don't know if that's exactly sound strategy to have as a franchise, especially when that guy's not even on the team yet. I think there's potential. He's on the Ducks by the end of this year, and then he's on the team next year, and that conversation certainly can be had then. But, I don't know.
Questions?
So let me see. Steven NHL said Murray has complained and threatened the leadership group the past 5 years. Pretty accurate, to be honest, when you think about
it. The go-to.
I feel like he always would criticize Perry, always criticize Getzlaf.
There's the Jordan fadeaway, and there's the Bob Murray publicly calling out veterans. Yeah.
What has he done about it? Murray, overall, these threats are kind of empty.
Well, he bought out Corey Perry.
And he traded Andrew Cogliano.
Yeah.
I think that's it, though.
Well, it's not a large group of players, so I would go with, he's done something about it, but yeah. I think he kind of just says it to say it.
All right. So LewisX209 said, what non-Ducks trade surprised you today? So this is a brief way to plug Patreon. We right after we finish this, and I'm not sure if we're going to upload this first or after. We'll figure that out when we get to it. But we will be recording a Patreon episode where we will be going over all of the trades of the day.
We're going through all of them. Should be fun. I'm excited for that.
It's
going
to be a good time. But
It's going to be more exciting than talking about the Ducks half rebuild.
Yeah. What was your most surprising move of the day?
Most surprising move was definitely Vinny Trocheck to the Hurricanes. I know that his name was out there because it's, all the insiders have been talking about it, but I just didn't think that it made sense for the Panthers to do that. And here we are, Vinny Trocheck, who's a borderline first line center. I think he has been in the past. I could be wrong. Not really following the Panthers that closely, is now on the Hurricanes. And they basically traded him for a bunch of stuff. I know that people like Eric Howla, but I'm not personally very high on him as a guy that you, as a key piece of a trade for Vincent Trocheck.
I'll go with Patrick Marleau.
Tell me why. Tell me why.
I just, because the fact that, remember when he was a free agent this summer.
But there's been rumors that him and Thornton were going to be moved.
Yeah.
And it turns out just Marleau was. It's
funny that he got moved when it was, he only wanted to play in San Jose. You're in California, that was it. And now, granted, it's for the stretch run, so it's not as long. Well,
the thing is, I don't think he saw the Sharks. No one saw the Sharks becoming just a joke. So that's probably a part of it. Here's the thing, though. Another one that I thought was surprising but didn't happen, Zach Parise.
Oh, that one came out of nowhere. I saw that rumor came up, I was just like, that's going to be the deal that breaks everyone's brain.
I just wanted that to happen just to show again how Lamoriello is questionable at best. Trading for Zach Parise in that contract. Anyway. Yeah. We'll get into all of that.
Yeah. Let's see. Steven NHL asked us, why does Murray make so many lateral moves? I think, honestly, trying to dissect this and get into his head, I think he doesn't fully understand is not the right word. I think he's always caught trying to take the team in a lot of different directions. And so the best way to do that is to trade one player of a specific style for another player of style.
I love all these one for ones.
Yeah. Cause it is legitimately, when you do a one for one deal,
like, not realize you can ask for like a fifth with
you
the
guy? You can get picks. Yeah. Cause when you're doing this one for one, it is obvious you're trying to just change the style. And I think at a certain point in time, when you're constantly changing the style, it becomes not beneficial to your team in the long run because you have no continuity. And I think that may be an issue in some ways. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but we got another question that said, mm-hmm. Go Ducks 10. Outside of the top two in the draft, who do you want to see the Ducks get the most?
Oh, man. I don't really have a great answer for that because I haven't really studied the draft outside of the top 10.
I have. The guy I want is Stutzel.
Yeah, but he's in the top five.
No, he said outside of the top two.
Oh, sorry. I heard top 10.
No, top two. Top okay. two. Would you like to give an answer?
Stutzel could go too.
Stutzel,
it's not impossible. No,
Byfield's going to. We know that.
I don't know.
Here's the thing. We've said this a couple times on the show, but reiterate it. There's a whole group of guys from 3 through essentially 8 that could be great. You've got Holtz, you've got Raymond, you've got Stutzel, you've got Rossi, you've got Drysdale, you've got Perfetti. I think there's probably one that I'm missing at some point in there. But to me, I just really like what I've seen from Stutzel's game. And I like the fact that he's playing in a professional league and succeeding in it. Holtz also intrigues me because of his ability to shoot and gives the Ducks a goal-scoring talent that they are sorely missing at this point in time. So, yep. Anything? You got anything else on that?
Nope. You're the draft guy.
I guess I'm the draft guy now? Is that my thing?
You're the draft guy.
Olaf his Berserker asked question, looking at changes to the roster since Randy was fired, does it seem like the organizational roster philosophy is moving towards a cohesive vision, or is it just players for players' sake?
Huh? Wait, sorry, can you repeat that?
Looking at the changes to the roster since Randy was fired, does it seem like the organizational roster philosophy is moving towards a cohesive vision, or are they just moving players to move players?
I do think we're inching towards that. Inching. Because they are swapping guys out in favor of some more skill, some more skating. They have introduced a bunch of young players. So we're seeing it, but then you're also seeing Nick Delorier getting re-upped. You're seeing Carter Rowney getting a 3-year deal. So it's and you're seeing them trade for David Backes, who will play for this team. So, yeah, you're not really seeing maybe a total cohesiveness, but I think there is definitely a clear sign that they're what they're moving towards.
Yeah. So George,
they made a lot of trades today.
They did. Well, that's the thing. A lot of people. It's funny, and
a lot happened.
I'm not usually one, as you can tell, to defend Bob Murray of late. I actually used to be more of someone that would defend him when people would kind of say some things that I didn't actually think were true. And one of the things that's actually completely false is that Bob Murray does nothing on trade deadline day. I think he's one of the most active general managers on deadline day in the past, like, decade.
But even by his standards, this was a really active one.
Oh, well, and how many deals got finished after afternoon?
A lot, like 3.
Yeah, there were, like...
I remember when we were all thinking, oh, Del Zotto's getting traded.
And it turned out it was
when the Ducks Twitter account cryptically tweeted, there's more.
Well, and there were 2 deals that came after that cryptic tweet.
Yeah. Yeah. Was Daniel Sprong one of those?
Mm.
Or no, he was before.
Maybe. No, he was after. There were 3 afterwards. Sprong for Juice happened after. Pearson happened after. And Holzer happened after.
Pearson.
Yeah, exactly. Georgie Khan actually threw this in the chat and I wanted to read. He said, not a question, but I want to thank Jake and Felix for taking their time, valuable time, in doing tonight's pod after having a busy day at their main job. So, thank you, George, for that.
I mean, in an ideal world, we would have done this at like 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And been done, but got to pay the bills.
Yep, exactly. LewisX209 said, question, with the expansion draft being exactly the same, will we just see Seattle and Vegas battle it out in the division and Western Conference the next 10 years?
Yeah, honestly, the Pacific's going to be ugly for a while.
Well, here's one thing I do want to say on the expansion draft, because people a lot of times want to look at that expansion draft that that Vegas had and say that it was rigged in their favor, that they had everything go their way.
Teams just mishandled it.
Yes. So Vegas was able to take advantage
of
teams.
Florida Panthers, Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, exactly. So this is not a situation where the rules of the expansion draft were rigged to set up Vegas to be good, and the rules of the expansion draft are rigged to make Seattle good.
Yeah, that was Seattle won't be as good as Vegas.
No, Seattle, I don't think any way.
I don't either.
And actually, one thing that I did want to... Actually, no, never mind. I was curious and I was going to look to see how it plays out, adding these players to the roster in terms of the expansion draft. And I realized that all of them at their age will be eligible. So every player the Ducks got will be eligible for the expansion draft.
Love it.
So just add more players that may have to be protected in Sonny Milano in, well, none of the defensemen are probably going to be protected. So there's that.
Okay.
Yep. So that's probably going to do it for the main show tonight.
All right.
Should we run one last tankathon or run a tankathon right now just for fun?
We haven't even been doing that.
I know, but should we do it at least? You know, trade deadline, sure. Got a draft pick. All right, throwing it up on the screen for everyone out there. Here we go. We're simming the lottery. Ducks got second, Kings got first.
Wow. Boom. Byfield? Do the Ducks take Byfield if they get second?
Do the Kings take Lafreniere?
Yeah, they have to.
Lafreniere and Byfield?
If you get one, you have to take Lafreniere.
I mean, what if they don't, though, and the Ducks get him?
But why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Because they don't have a center? I mean, I don't think it makes sense.
No, it doesn't. But that would be interesting.
Man,
if the
Kings get the first overall pick, they're going to be good in not that long of time.
Thanks.
I'm just not to make Ducks fans around the world feel depressed, but the Kings, if you look at their cap sheet, have just cleared house. It is striking. Anyway, okay, let's enough about the Kings. Okay, folks. Well, we're gonna wrap things up here. So, Jake and I are about to go record our Patreon show, which for those of you who don't know, we offer two different tiers where you can support us with a monthly pledge. So for $1 a month, you can participate in our patrons only Discord chat, which is a lot of fun. We actually, it was pretty alive today for the trade deadline. I got to say,
yes,
there was a lot of back and forth, and on weeknights for Ducks games that are in the Pacific Standard Time Zone, we do an in-game live chat, so we're just going back and forth in there. Jake gets to complain about the refs, so it's a lot of fun. No.
Wait, I don't complain about the refs ever.
I'm swapping in refs for something else.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun, and that's for $1 a month. For $5 a month, though, you still get access to the Discord chat, but on top of that, you get access to two bonus episodes a month. So if you enjoy the show that we do here, the regular show, and you enjoy some of the back and forth, well, I think that the Patreon show is perfect for you. We also get into more league-wide topics. Sometimes we'll just go non-sports related. We did movie reviews recently, when the new Star Wars came out. So they're a lot of fun. And tonight we're going to be recording a full-on trade deadline recap. So that's going to be intense, but it's also just going to be fun. Maybe a little less analytical and just more looking at it from a fan perspective. So that's for $5 a month, and you can find that at patreon.com/ACPod. Different ways that you can support the show, though, if you don't want to spend any money on us. I understand money can be tight. Leave a rating and a review on the Apple Podcast app. So just search Anaheim Calling and we'll pop up right away, and you can type in a review. Just takes a couple minutes, and it honestly goes a very long way. First off, we appreciate hearing from you guys and knowing how we're doing. It also helps us climb up those charts on Apple. If you're not an Apple Podcast, we are on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. We get some pretty interesting comments on there, so keep those coming. And we are on Stitcher and SoundCloud.
Oh, I do want to mention...
Or not SoundCloud, sorry.
I actually
Spotify.
My bad, Spotify. I forgot to mention this. Also, live streams of the show. Each and every time that we do a show, it will be at twitch.tv/ACPod, where you can help support the show. If you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime sub each and every time. You do have to hit that subscribe button after 30 days. I did want to give a shout out to Varluna, who resubbed for 14 months and said what a fantastic ride this has been. LewisX209 said resubscribed for 17 months. Georgie Khan, our good buddy, resubscribed for 12 months. So want to give a shout out to all those people that have been with us for a very, very long time now on this show, been supporting us on this platform. And I want to give a shout out to everyone that was in this Twitch chat as we're starting to wind down. This was one of our, bigger, highly viewed episodes of this show. So shout out to everyone
people love that
for making the, the Twitch chat a really good time and just a really good conversation between everyone in there. It's really great to see. And this is what we're looking for. And everyone out there, it seems, was trade drunk.
Trade drunk. Well, yeah, I mean, this is the day where it's okay to be trade drunk.
It's Jake not okay
trade drunk 365 days of the year.
It's not okay on other days.
What are we going to talk about for the rest of the season?
Trades?
I feel a little
they can still
now.
Make trades.
Can they?
They still can. They just can't play in the playoffs. The Ducks aren't making the playoffs anyways.
Well, you don't know that. Okay.
As we just did Tankathon.
Moving on from that statistically incorrect comment. Yes, so Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, we're all over the place, so check us out wherever it works best for you. Yeah. There's also the main site, AnaheimCalling.com. There's an article up on the site for every move today. Yeah. So check
really
that
great
out.
Coverage.
At Anaheim Calling on Twitter. Jake is on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. That is going to do it for us tonight, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you at the next show.
Bye.